Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Well, my son graduated, heading for college, trying to figure out his major. I told him, watch out for psychology, see? Psychology, you major in psychology, this involves talking about rats and dreams. We psychologists are obsessed with rats and dreams. I once spent an entire semester training a rat to punch little buttons in a certain sequence. And then I trained my roommate to do the same thing. The rat learned a lot faster. If you like rats or dreams, or if you dream about rats, you should major in psychology. Good morning, Wes. Good afternoon, East. Dr. Ager, Andy here. Thank you so much for joining me here on E-Person Monday. Well, the actual umbrella show is The Doctor Is In. But this is a special edition. This is where we tackle the E-Persons. That's right. E-persons. Gender neutral. Somewhat. The word son is still in there. We tackle those. We read between the lines. We see what we can come up with. Awful lot of folks email. And the reasons for emailing are varied. I don't want to go on the air because I know of one other person who does listen in another state, but they could be listening. Or I'm too shy, too nervous to go on the air. Or I sometimes get this. Hard for me not to write back. Dr. A, I'm eating lunch during your show, so I didn't want to interrupt my lunch. Now, keeping in mind, they're not eating the lunch at work. They're eating lunch at home, which raises the question, how concerned are you about this particular matter that you don't want to put your sandwich down? That was my wife that wrote that. So, today we're going to tackle some e-persons. I got an interesting comment from Nell in Poland. This is going back a little ways in this email. I just noticed this from Nell. She's going to ask about the whole idea of sentences actually affecting a child's behavior, teaching them a lesson. Then I got an email here from Jennifer. Oh, yeah. The old... What about how you treat the other child? Why are you punishing me? You know, this person did that. All right, I'll talk about that. But right now, as part of my manlog, this was sent to me by my sister-in-law. This was written by Marilyn Wedge, PhD, Dr. Marilyn Wedge. I will quote parts of this article and will comment. In the United States, at least 9% of school-aged children have been diagnosed with ADHD and are taking pharmaceutical medications. That's sky high, by the way. Some of the top professionals in this area generally talk about 3 to 5%. And that in and of itself is it's a word I'm looking for. Not arbitrary, but is a judged end of the tail end of the continuum. In France now, when you think of France, what do you think of? You think of permissiveness, right? Secularism, right? Lack of religion, right? In France, the percentage of kids diagnosed and medicated for ADHD is less than 0.5%. She asks, how has the epidemic of ADHD firmly established in the U.S. almost completely passed over children in France? Is ADHD a biological, neurological disorder? Surprisingly, she says, the answer to this question depends upon whether you live in France or in the U.S. In the United States, child psychiatrists consider ADHD to be a biological disorder with biological causes. Preferred treatment is also biological. Psychostimulant medications such as Ritalin and Adderall. French child psychologists, on the other hand, view ADHD as a medical condition that has psychosocial and situational causes, i.e. read parenting and family. French doctors prefer to look for the underlying issue that is causing the child distress, not in the child's brain, but in the child's social context. Psychotherapy, family counseling. To the extent that French clinicians are successful and finding and repairing what has gone awry in the child's social context, in other words, life, fewer children qualify for the ADHD diagnosis. Let me jump in here with my own experience. I often get a parent who comes in because their child has been diagnosed somewhere by somebody as ADHD. Keeping in mind that the diagnosis of ADHD is a judgment call. There's no test to give that says, ah, you have it, or no, you don't. Furthermore, the question of who made the diagnosis is critical. Kids diagnosed with ADHD, it most often shows up in school. As a result, that child's got to be observed in school. I, as a clinician, feel that I am shortchanging my client if I, quote-unquote, try to make this diagnosis without seeing this child in his environment, just on the basis of what somebody's telling me. There could be many reasons, many causes for what somebody's telling me. Oftentimes, unfortunately, these kids are diagnosed on the basis of a self-report survey given to the parents or given to the teacher. It comes back, they look at the survey, they score it, and they say, ah, gee, look, he falls way out here on the impulse continuum, way out here on the distractibility continuum. So therefore, let's try the medication. Bad way to do it. Bad way to do it. The French approach goes after, when they say context, they mean kind of parenting. Parents will come in my office. Somebody has diagnosed their child as ADHD. Ah, right? They'll say, what does this mean for my parenting? Do I need to be more tolerant of misconduct, more tolerant of impulsive behavior, difficult behavior? Because after all, he has a condition, and he can't help himself. Well, I will tell you, I've seen very, very, very few children who have lost all ability to help themselves, who have lost all semblance of self-control. They have zero self-control. They may have less self-control than the average kid. On a 1 to 10 scale, if the average kid has an 8, they got a 6. But they still have self-control. Draw a parallel to aging. Who has more self-control, 9-year-old or a 4-year-old? Of course the 9-year-old does. Significantly. Would this mean you wouldn't discipline a 4-year-old? Well, a 4-year-old doesn't have the self-control of a 9-year-old. What about a 2-year-old? 2-year-olds are notorious for a lack of self-control. Do you not discipline a 2-year-old? Of course you do. Much of the time when parents come in my office and the diagnosis of ADHD has either been made or bandied about, I say, let's work on your discipline parenting skills with this child and see what happens. Surprisingly, after a session, two, sometimes three, if the parents are cooperative and do the things we talk about, they will come back and say things like, well, he's still the toughest of my four kids, but it's not as bad as it was. I ask, would you still, on the basis of what you're seeing now, would you still wonder if this kid is ADHD? No, he's impulsive, but it's not off the charts impulsive. I got in trouble one time. I forget where I was quoted. My point was, how hard is it to separate out a lack of impulse control that is neurologically based? In other words, it's a developmental problem. The kid just doesn't have up there as much self-control as the average kid his age. And how much of it is that he's never learned it because he hasn't been taught it? The parenting, the discipline has been weak, permissive, unstable, erratic, irresolute, hostile, nasty. In other words, been all kinds of problems with the upbringing. Would this not have an effect on a child's ability to control his impulses as he gets older? So that a kid who's been in an environment like that at age 9 does not have the social self-control of an average 9-year-old. Well, I got in all kinds of trouble. I got a nasty letter for some guy that's a specialist in the ADHD area. He said basically, how dare you? How dare you? This is a neurochemically based disorder. It is not a behavioral disorder. Oh, really? They overlap. And as a matter of fact, one of his colleagues said that the most common diagnosis associated with ADHD is ODD, oppositional defiant disorder. In other words, because of the kid's, if you want to say, neurochemically based impulse control problems, he develops bad behavior. Am I allowed to say bad? Maybe I should say inappropriate or unacceptable, much more morally antiseptic. He develops this. Okay. I want to quote her again. This is Dr. Wedge again. She says, there are vastly different philosophies of child rearing in the U.S. and France. These philosophies, these divergent philosophies, could account for why French children are generally better behaved than their American counterparts. From the time their children are born, French parents provide them with a firm cadre. The word means structure. Children are not allowed, for example, to snack whenever they want. Meal times are at specific times of the day. French children learn to wait patiently for meals rather than eating snack foods whenever they feel like. French parents have a different philosophy of discipline, consistently enforce limits. In the French view, make children feel safe and secure. Clear limits, they believe, actually make a child feel happier and safer. Shock, shock, huh? She says, something that is congruent with my own experience as both a therapist and a parent. Finally, French parents believe that hearing the word no rescues children from, quote, the tyranny of their own desires. And here's where she pulls the standard expert qualifier. And spanking, when used judiciously, is not considered child abuse in France. And then in quotes, authors note, I am not personally in favor of spanking children. End parentheses. The point? Spanking is such an awful, evil, child-rearing sin that we've always got to qualify. Well, you know, that's this, but that's not me. That's not me. Or even proponents of spanking will say things like, well, I'm not talking beating children. Who is? Or a light tap on the bottom. Light tap, was that token? She concludes, as a therapist who works with children, it makes perfect sense to me that French children don't need medications to control their behavior because they learn self-control earlier in their lives. The children grow up in families in which the rules are well understood and a clear family hierarchy is firmly in place. In French families, parents are firmly in charge of their kids instead of the American family style, in which the situation is all too often vice versa. Who'd have thunk it? France, secular, cliched permissive, lack of religion, better behaved kids, at least according to Dr. Wedge. I'm Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
pray, play, and simply be together at the Notre Dame Summer Retreat. Holy Cross Family Ministries invites you to attend the annual weekend retreat for families at the University of Notre Dame, August 7th through 9th. Listen to inspirational talks by former Notre Dame coach Jerry Faust, Sister Terry Rickard, and Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchek. Bring your family for a weekend of prayer, fun, and togetherness. For complete details, go to familyrosary.org/events or call 800-299-7729.
Summer finally seems to be here with some warm weather and summer festivals. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and we're celebrating our 15-year anniversary with our summer clearance event. All 2015 models are discounted to the lowest payments of the year, with over 500 new and certified pre-owned vehicles to choose from. Express yourself with style and luxury with payments as low as $149 per month on vehicles with up to 40 miles per gallon, only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at pinckneychrysler.com.
This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory Retreat Centers offers substance abuse treatment options using traditional Catholic teaching about virtue and access to daily Mass and reconciliation, combined with the latest evidence-based practices in substance abuse. More information is available at 888-778-5833 or online at stgregoryctr.com.
Tired of expensive and immoral health insurance? CMF Puro is the first of its kind Catholic healthcare sharing experience. It's affordable, Christ-centered healthcare and is faithful to church teachings. It provides access to medical care that protects your religious liberty and respects the gospel of life. Live your faith, choose life, and join CMF Puro today. CMF Puro empowers families to experience Christ in their healthcare. Alleluia. That's CMFCURO.com.
Well, there's some college information. I mean, those of you with children who graduated, considering college, according to Dave Barry, college is basically a bunch of rooms where you sit for roughly 2,000 hours and you try to memorize things. Now, the hours are spread out over 4 years, and you spend the rest of your time sleeping and trying to get dates. Basically, you learn two kinds of things in college. Things you will need to know in later life, 2 hours. Things you will not need to know later in life, 1,998 hours. These are things you learn in classes who name end in ology, osophy, istry, ix, and so on. The idea is you are to memorize these things. You write them down in little exam books, and then you forget them. If you fail to forget them, you become a professor and have to stay in college for the rest of your life. This is E-Person Monday with Dr. Ray Garandi. This is an old E-Person. Got it from a delightful woman in Poland, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Wrocla, W-R-O-C-L-A-W, Wrocla, Poland, written many years ago from Nell. She is a linguistics professor. I should have kept her emails because they would have made a wonderful book. Dear Dr. Ray, on your program, you often suggest that parents make children write sentences when they misbehave. Well, it's kind of a written timeout is what I do. I don't experience the sentences as some kind of repetitive driving force into a child's conscious or subconscious, as it were, and make them develop these cognitive habits. I'm sure this is a good idea. Excuse me, because when I was a child and I slammed the door, my mother would make me come back, close it again quietly, 5 or 10 times. That really burnt me up, but I learned not to slam doors. See, what Nell is saying is that rather than writing, which is an indirect shutting the door quietly, in other words, you write 50 times, I will not kick a door shut, rather than going back and shutting it. Kind of an indirect. Vicarious. So I know that the tedium of writing sentences over and over would probably be a good way to make a child stop doing something bad. Oh, there's that word.
bad. We can't use bad. It's judgmental. It's value-laden language. She should have said mistakes were made. But Nell asked, what I want to know is whether the content of the sentences themselves matters. Now, before I get into this, I want to make a comment. As I said, Nell is a linguistics professor. She writes. That's what she does. Her profession is literary. She has no problems, by the way. Unlike people who have a cliched resistance to any kind of writing as punishment. She has no problems with this. She doesn't see it as something that would make a child hate writing for the rest of their life. So she says, do the content of the sentences matter? For example, if mom says, don't bounce on the couch, and Cliff goes on bouncing on the couch, does it matter if she makes him write, I will obey my mother's commands, or I will not bounce on the couch? If he writes, I will obey my mother's commands, will that make him obedient whenever she tells him to do something, not just obedient about bouncing on the couch? Okay, let me tackle that one there now. Let me take a bounce at that. The writing itself is more of a written timeout to somehow, some way, pile drive through repetition a certain attitude into a child's head, i.e., I will not bounce on the couch because I've written it 50 times. Therefore, somehow, some way, the very nature of the repetitiveness will make me, I don't want to say automaton-like, habitually learn not to bounce on the couch. I don't see it as having that kind of effect. Now, if you write, I will obey my mother, many shrink types, many expert types, say that you always put your rules in the positive. You don't say, no talking out in class. You say, raise hand to speak. You don't say, no getting out of seat without permission. You say, stay in seat. So I'm going to tell it next time I get stopped by a state trooper. I'm going to look at him. Say, officer, please, don't say don't speed. That's so authoritarian. It's so autocratic. I'd be much more likely to be obedient if you would tell me, please stay within the posted speed limits. It would make you sound much more reasonable, officer. And then I would get my ticket. What if parents are a bit more ambitious in what they make their children write? Suppose mom and dad hope that their little Johnny will grow up to be a Catholic shrink. Will it help his chances if every time he misbehaves they make him write, I must diminish and Christ must increase? I have a more urgent question, Dr. Ray. Since you are responsible for the problem, I hope you can help with it. I don't live in the U.S., so I listen to your archive programs on the website. This also allows me to listen whenever I want to. Recently, I missed several shows. So I decided to have a Dr. Ray Fest while doing some housework and listen to several of your shows back to back. After I listened to about 2.5 hours of your shows, I began to feel a tightness all over my head. Another half hour is having trouble lifting my head. I felt like I was going to topple forward all the time. Half hour later, I could barely see. I dragged myself to the mirror and was shocked. My head had swollen up about 4 times its normal size. My eyes were slits. My frontal lobes were sticking out like doorknobs. She is a writer, isn't she? I quickly realized the problem. By listening to you, my brain cells had begun multiplying at an astronomic rate, causing my brain to grow, hence the enormous growth of my head. Dr. Ray, I think there needs to be a dosage warning on the doctor is in. Do not exceed one program in any 24-hour period. That's not my real problem. The problem is, with all the rapid brain growth followed by rapid shrinking, I now look like one of those Shar-Pei dogs. People stare at me on the street. My self-esteem has been ruined. I can't afford plastic surgery, and I'm tired of having to pull my scalp back into a ponytail. I would turn to you for help, but I'm afraid that you'd talk for more than an hour and the whole thing would start over again. Dr. Ray, from time to time, you mention a colleague of yours. Dr. Springer, I believe? I lived out of the United States for 11 years now, so I've never heard of him before you recommended him on your show. Sounds like my problem is just the sort of thing that he specializes in. On your next program, could you mention how I could get in touch with him? I don't think Dr. Springer's a doctor. You know? Nell, by the way, when we come back, I just want to give you a little postscript on something Nell did. And then we will get to Jennifer's, where she is flummoxed. Because every time they discipline one of their children, they point out how bad the other sibling really is. We'll talk about that. I'm Dr. Ray here on ePerson Monday. I thank you so much for joining me. Rejoin you momentarily.
Peggy Stanton, and I'm inviting you to join me on Power from the Pews when I interview the people who are engaged in remarkable ministries that are making a real difference in their parishes and the world. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. All ladies are invited to the Women of Grace Retreat Weekend beginning Friday, July 17th in Orchard Lake. John F. Benkovic, Father Philip Scott, and Dr. Monica Miller will be leading this retreat with the theme, My Grace is Sufficient for You, Woman in God's Divine Plan. To register, visit womenofgrace.org or call 1-800-558-5452. Join Couple to Couple League International in celebrating Natural Family Planning Week, July 19th through the 26th. Events include a talk at St. Anastasia's in Troy on Thursday, July 23rd, and a family picnic at the VFW Park in Royal Oak, Sunday, July 26th. For more information, call 313-451-4NFP. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Hi, Deacon Tom here with a reminder that Ave Maria Radio has some terrific gift ideas for you. Books by our hosts and our guests, recordings on CD, and our new Wi-Fi radios so you can listen to Catholic radio anywhere in the world, anytime you want, as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection. Just go to our website and click the word store in the navigation bar at the top of the page. It's an easy way to shop, and you can help Catholic radio at the same time. The website can be found at AveMariaRadio.net.
Dr. Ray Grindy, thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. My website's drray.com. Speaking schedule there, video clips, past monologues that made the cut, and there's very few of those, and the bookstore with right now closing in on 20 products, books, CDs, DVDs. People say, how can you write so much of that stuff? It's easy. You can't worry about it being any good. If you start worrying about quality, it's going to slow you down tremendously. Okay. I want to make a comment on Nell's e-person here. As I said, she's a linguistics literature professor in Poland, PhD. Brilliant woman. She has no problem with parents using writing as a form of discipline. None. She tells me an interesting story. Now, let me give you a backdrop on this. educators especially, teachers especially, are very nervous, and many of them are hostile toward any time I might suggest a child write an essay or write sentences or a written apology, because the English or the literature teachers say, don't use my subject for punishment. How would you like it if I used one of your books for punishment? If I assigned my children to read one of your books for punishment? I said, well, if they buy it, I think I'd be good with that. I ask them, when I have time at a school in service, would you be willing to try an experiment? Starting tomorrow, tell the children there will no longer be grades in your English class or your literature class. Furthermore, all assignments will be voluntary. Nobody has to turn in anything. You want them to write for the sheer enjoyment of putting together coherent sentences and paragraphs. So, given that, we're not going to impose the threat of a bad grade or failing the course. No, no. That will turn them off toward writing. It's imposition. It's punishment, really. I'll punish you with a D or an F if you don't turn this stuff in. At the end of 1 month, how many assignments will be turned in? And there's sheepish smiles all over the place because they realize quickly what would happen. Even the first-year teachers know what would happen. Writing is a discipline, and it oftentimes has to be imposed from the outside. Nell, my friend in Poland, the PhD literature teacher, had a prof who tried something similar. It was a grad student writing class, all pursuing advanced degrees in writing. Prof said, you should not need anyone to make you write at this point in your education. You should write for the sheer enjoyment of writing. So from this point forward, all assignments will be voluntary. Children were all excited. Hey, this is great. Well, children, students, we're all excited. Hey, we get to prove ourselves. Yeah. Nell made the observation that it was a short period of time before the assignments trickled down to near zero. She concluded, even among those who are in some element of writing as a career, to just write for the sheer enjoyment is something only a small minority are acclimated to. I write. Yeah, I got books. And it's a good thing the editor's pushing on me. If the editor wasn't, I'd say, I'm putting out about 4 words a day. But they're good words, though. They're polysyllabic words. This is from Jennifer. Dr. Ray, I have several questions. And I, being a typical estrogen American, could easily, she caps easily, type a 10-volume novel. However, I will narrow it down to one today. How would you suggest we handle this scenario? My children, daughter age 14, going on 25, yeah, parents say this all the time, don't they? Seven going on 17. Child is 9, going on 19. Do you ever notice they almost always are referring to a girl? With boys, he's 14, going on 9. It's the other direction. With girls, it's always 10 years hence. I'm wondering what that says. My children, daughter age 14, and son almost 12. Every time we discipline either one for anything, each will automatically say, well, what about him? Or, what about her? We try to just ignore that diversion. But they continue. Especially the girl. She'll go on and on stating that her brother gets whatever he wants. Truth be told, the boy is the one who is always in trouble, the one who takes forever to grasp the concepts. Any advice for when the children blurt out, what about your brother? What about your sister? How come you're not going after them? Okay, Jen. I did a monologue on this a little while back. And I talked about why is it, what is it about fallen human nature that we look outside of ourselves to defend ourselves? Oh, yeah, what about you? You do the same thing. Oh, okay, I was wrong, but I'm not the one who was most wrong. This is a habit with adults. You don't have to be 14 and 12 to develop this. This comes natural to the fallen human condition. So when you got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old both saying, well, what about him? What about her? Why don't you do something about them? It's part of the natural fallen human tendency not to look within, not to look at ourselves. Your question here, Jennifer, is what do we do about it? My daughter doesn't shut up. She just continues. Could this be part of the reason why you say she's 14 going on 25? That somehow she thinks she's more adult-like than she is? Somehow she thinks that you're just not doing it right, mother, and it's a good thing I'm here. I'll tell you that right now. I got here when I was 3, and from then on, I noticed more and more how much you were messing up motherhood. Well, when we come back on this E-Person Monday, I will tackle poor Jen's question. Dr. Ray Grandy, I thank you for joining me so very much. Now I got to talk to my friend, Harold Ziegler.
Do you want a family physician who respects the inherent dignity of every human person of any age? Do you want your physician to respect parents as the primary educators of their children and not the secular culture? Sacred Heart Medical Center is a medical practice that is Christ-centered, family-oriented, and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. With locations in Livonia and Brighton, learn more today by calling 734-338-0600. That's 734-338-0600 or at sacredheartmedical.org.
Pray, play, and simply be together at the Notre Dame Summer Retreat. Holy Cross Family Ministries invites you to attend the annual weekend retreat for families at the University of Notre Dame, August 7th through 9th. Listen to inspirational talks by former Notre Dame coach Jerry Faust, Sister Terry Rickard, and Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchek. Bring your family for a weekend of prayer, fun, and togetherness. For complete details, go to familyrosary.org/events or call 800-299-7729.
Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Yes, we play that kind of music. I feel smarter already. This is Dr. Ray Grandy. Thank you for joining me here on E-Person Monday, where we tackle the e-persons that come in my... And I say e-person because I am gender sensitive. That's right. I'm not going to say e-mail. A little bit too patriarchal. Now, I was talking to Jennifer here. Well, actually, I wasn't talking to her, but I felt we had a connection. Here's what she says. My children, 14 and 12, every time we discipline them, automatically say, well, what about the other guy? Now, keep in mind, this is not a scenario where they're both in trouble. In other words, we were doing something wrong together, and you nail me, but not him. No, this is, they could be in another part of the continent. And they would say, yeah, well, what about? I remember with our children, my daughter had kept a diary of all the times we punished her so that when succeeding children did somewhat similar, she pulled out her diary and she said, let me tell you what you did to me on Tuesday, August 12th, 2001. I wrote it down. Why are you allowing him to get away with the exact same thing that you fired off a nuclear warhead on me? Now, Jen, the problem here is that you said the girl goes on and on. You said she'll go on and on, stating that her brother gets whatever he wants. Essentially, she's convincing herself of how unjust you are. I also noticed you said, truth be told, the boy is the one who's always in trouble. Well, we got two answers to this, Jen. On one hand, it may be that he gets in so much trouble that your daughter says you don't nail him for everything, and you think to yourself, I can't nail him for everything. The kid would be in jail, flat out, no parole. Get a good parole officer, Jen. It's very important. I've learned that with my own children. Secondly, it could be that your daughter is just whining about this. She's a little princess. What about him? The key here is you don't have to be badgered. It's one thing to throw out in passing, he gets away with a lot more than I do. That's one thing. But to not let it go, to simply go on and on and on. Is this related to you saying your daughter, age 14, going on 25? Is this related? Are you saying that somehow she thinks she's much more grown up than she is and that she should run things, not you? As I said earlier, whenever you add years to a child's age, if you say, he's 8, going on 18, she's 9, going on 29, it's always the girl that goes up. You never hear a parent say, my son, oh yeah, he's 8. Going on 18. No. He's 8. Going on 5. It's always back the other way with boys, up this way with girls. And I think that has something to do with this innate desire to rule. It's like a standard 5-year-old girl comes up and says, oh, mother, I think I can take it from here. I do appreciate the guidance you've given me on these first few years, but I feel compelled to tell you, you were wrong on most of it. Why don't you raise Dad? He's got about 10 or 12 more years of middle school to go through. Take care of him. Give your daughter a warning, Jennifer. Give her a look. Remember the look? Give her that look that says, if you go on, I'm going to do more. What you want to do is take away her natural tendency, her fallen nature tendency, to defend herself. As I said in an earlier monologue, we are always on the lookout for why we're not wrong. And if I have to point to other people to mitigate my level of wrongdoing, I will. It's like a person who says, you think I'm bad? What about him? That's why shows like Springer and reality shows are so popular. Because, I'm not like that guy. Look at those people. Look how messed up they are. Not me. Exactly. On a continuum, I fare pretty good. I may be all heck to live with, but can you imagine living with that guy? So, Jen, you're not going to change her attitude. She just may stay on the lookout for all of your inequity. Okay. But you're going to stop the reiterating, complaining, and the badgering. All right. That's enough of that. Next question. This is interesting, and I'm going to take this after the break. This is a Lutheran who considers himself close to the Catholic Church. He sees marriage as a sacrament, but he's in a marriage that in his mind falls a lot short of that. So we will talk to the Reverend. Didn't realize that he is a Reverend. Maybe a pastor. Dr. Ray Grandy, we'll be back.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by our day sponsor, who want to invite young adults ages 18 to 40 to attend the Faith, Food, and Fellowship Gathering on July 15th at Joe Bologna's in Troy. The topic is the life of Blessed Pierre Giorgio Frassati, and is sponsored by the Firestarters of St. Anastasia Church, also in Troy. For info, go to stanastasia.org.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Dunha-Garmo, co-publisher and editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. It's a news magazine for the Chaldean community, about the Chaldean community, and for anyone who wants to engage the Chaldean community. As Christians from Iraq, Chaldeans are proud supporters of Ave Maria Catholic Radio. We invest many hours into this monthly news magazine to keep you invested in the community. You can subscribe or advertise today. Contact us at www.chaldeannews.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
This show is sponsored in part by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a nonprofit diocesan ministry serving in many dioceses. As an extension of your parish community, we specialize in guiding you through the entire end-of-life process, making decisions easy and faith-driven for you now and for your loved ones later. 800-498-4989. That's 800-498-4989.
Pray, play, and simply be together at the Notre Dame Summer Retreat. Holy Cross Family Ministries invites you to attend the annual weekend retreat for families at the University of Notre Dame, August 7th through 9th. Listen to inspirational talks by former Notre Dame coach Jerry Faust, Sister Terry Rickard, and Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchek. Bring your family for a weekend of prayer, fun, and togetherness. For complete details, go to familyrosary.org/events or call 800-299-7729.
Dr. Ray Grandy, a combination of virile femininity, masculine sensitivity, and physical spirituality, not to mention prideful humility. Delighted to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, special edition today, E-Person. E-Person Monday, where we tackle your E-Persons. And we have a very, very, very sensitive one from Reverend Jerry coming up here in a second. But I just want to give a couple more tidbits of college advice for the kids heading off to college. You're supposed to choose a major, you know, which is the subject you intend to memorize and to forget the most things about. Be sure to choose a major that does not involve known facts and right answers. This means you must not major in mathematics, physics, biology, or chemistry, because these subjects involve actual facts. If, for example, you major in mathematics, you're going to wander into class one day, professor will say, define the cosine integer of a quadrant of a rhomboid binary axis and extrapolate your result to 5 significant vertices. If you don't come up with exactly the answer the professor has in mind, you fail. The same is true of chemistry. If you write in your exam book that carbon and hydrogen combine to form oak, your professor will flunk you. He wants you to come up with the same answer he and all other chemists have agreed upon. Scientists are extremely snotty about this. So, major in subjects like English, philosophy, psychology, sociology. These are subjects in which nobody really understands what anybody else is talking about and which involve virtually no actual facts. One who's been there. This is from Reverend Jerry. Dr. Ray, I'm a Protestant. A Lutheran who often considers myself closer to the Roman Catholic Church than my contemporary Lutheran brothers. While Lutherans do not consider marriage a sacrament, I personally do. I am divorced. My wife divorced me. I wanted to work on the relationship, but she had fallen in love with another. Did not want to work on the relationship almost 5 years ago. I dealt with this, come to terms with the fact that reconciliation is not possible. My question has to do with the fact that I still view the marital vows I took as binding. As a Protestant, I do not have an ecclesial remedy such as a tribunal or an annulment. And even if I did, I'm not sure that the relationship really meets the requirements for an annulment. So, what do you say to a person who is bound by the vows of marriage, but who has no realistic hope of reconciliation? It's like a living death that has no final completion, a sort of ongoing Holy Saturday, with Easter always being somewhere over the horizon. Most of my Protestant friends and colleagues can offer me nothing more than, it's time to get over it and move on. And my Roman Catholic colleagues that I have spoken to tend to take the, well, it's not a sacrament for you, so there's no problem. One colleague offered me the option of availing the local tribunal, which I'm considering. Thank you, Pastor Jerry. First of all, Pastor Jerry, let me start off by saying you're a hero to me. I believe that even though you are not Roman Catholic, you're not Catholic, you are following a truth given by God in Scripture, a truth which most non-Catholic traditions have drifted from, which is marriage is permanent. A valid marriage is permanent. Christ's clear about that. The apostles were clear about that when they said, well, it's better not to get married then. Because they knew what he was talking about. So something deep within you says, I want to follow what I believe God has said. Even though I'm not within the visible confines of the Catholic Church. So I admire you so much. Secondly, you are living according to your conscience. A well-formed conscience is very powerful. We have a duty to form our conscience. Looks to me, in this particular matter, you formed your conscience pretty well. And you're essentially saying, my conscience says I am still married. My vows were a commitment for life. She broke them. I didn't. Now, what you're hearing from the people within your particular faith tradition or other Protestant traditions is the standard mindset, which is, hey, divorce is okay. Don't worry about it. God doesn't expect you to live in a situation that's unhappy, or he doesn't expect you to persevere being, quote-unquote, unmarried. You're getting a teaching that is distinctly not Catholic. Thirdly, I don't know if you are without recourse. You said, I'm a Lutheran who often considers myself closer to the Roman Catholic Church than my contemporary Lutheran brothers. Jerry, question to be asked is, how deeply are you attracted to the Catholic Church? How strong is the pull? If, in fact, you're slowly moving there, and at some point you may decide to fully commit to the Catholic Church, then you come into the discipline of the Church, which would say, Jerry, we can now look at the state of your mind, your wife's mind, the psychological, the social, whatever factors were involved. She obviously thought it was okay to have another relationship outside the marriage. Was that attitude there when she got married? In other words, if this doesn't work out, we can get a divorce. So in Catholic teaching, that would be a significant factor in saying that at the time of the marriage, There is real question here as to whether the commitment was understood and embraced. So that's one option, Jerry. Another one, of course, is to recognize that what you're doing by your conscience and by God's word, and if you believe that the Catholic Church has authority to teach in Christ's name, by that teaching, that you are following 2,000 years of Christian history and teaching. Only in the last few hundred, has divorce and remarriage been pretty much a standard practice among other Christian traditions. Wasn't that way. It was a relaxing of the marital bond, the marital commitment. And you see what it's led to. You see what it's led to. So, Jerry, I admire you. I admire your strength. I admire your honesty of conscience. I know that might not be much in the way of helping you persevere through this. I'm going to give you a call. I've got your number here. We got to talk further about this. Put that right there where I can get a hold of it. Once again, I thank you for joining me on this E-Person Monday. Tomorrow, good Lord permitting. Tuesday, the doctor is in, where you and I put our heads together, and Andrew Krucek, my producer man, answers the phone. He gets a lot of calls. He handles a lot of them on that end. I suspect I never see half of them because he takes care of it. Nevertheless, Andrew's a father. Father of two, boy and a girl, Otter Rose and little Johnny. And she's kind of running things. Johnny just kind of runs around and makes mayhem. I'm Dr. Ray Grandy. I thank you so much for keeping me company. Walk with God. You got kids? Hold them tight, or tightly, by the hand.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. And I say also to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. This passage from Matthew describes the commission of Peter, given to him at Banias, ancient Caesarea Philippi, before the great rock of the pagan shrine, known to be one of the gates of the underworld. Realizing that the gates of hell have it in for us may give us pause, but no one has ever been attacked by a gate. It's a defensive measure. The prince of this world is on the defensive, which means that we are on the offensive. The gates of hell will not pursue us. Rather, we, the church militant, will attack the gates to set the captives free. We are already equipped and commissioned to raid and poach in Satan's territory and rescue souls out from under him. Are you ready for the task at hand?
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile. 5% of your mobile plan price goes to a pro-life or Catholic charity at no additional cost to you. More information can be found at CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Building the apostolate of the laity and leading in the new evangelization. Ave Maria Radio joins.